Welcome to the Bad Guy Muay Thai Podcast. We have a new sponsor for this episode. It is StayRoasted.com. You can save 50% off your first order by using the link StayRoasted.com/BGMT. StayRoasted.com is a single origin coffee subscription service. You can get coffee shipped to your house in just a few days, twice a month. You can use it, pause it, upgrade, downgrade with just a few clicks. And most important, these whole beans stay fresh, like others may go stale before you have a chance to use them. To support us and support the podcast, please visit StayRoasted.com/BGMT. We will include a link in the podcast profile. Thank you for checking it out.
Go for it. I can be your hero, baby. I can kiss away the pain. I will stand by you forever. You can take my breath away.
Holy shit. Everybody, welcome to the Bad Guy Muay Thai Podcast. Jesus Christ.
My voice has been known to be a combination of Fergie and Jesus.
You know, you sang that song, but I think I might have another one that's a little bit more awesome. Let me see. You know, it's a little guy named John Cicada, and I don't know if you know his famous song called Just Another Day.
It's wonderful. I could dance to this.
This, if I was gonna fight, this is my walkout song.
If I was gonna jerk off, this would be my song. I think you should let me now tag in and play a song.
We're going to get kicked off.
You know, come on the podcast today. Just wanted to shoot some questions because we know you got a lot going your way. How did you come up with the Underground Strength Gym? How did all of this come about, your dream, and how did it lead to where you are today?
So, kind of was in your shoes, but not at such a high level. But I was coaching wrestling, middle school, high school level, and I was teacher at the time, physical education teacher, and I started getting really into, I would see, at the time, UFC was not called MMA, it was called No Holds Barred, or NHB fighting, and there was a lot of wrestlers being very successful. They were really more ground and pound guys, and I like kind of the word at the time was NHB or shoot fighting. So I didn't even Google it because Google was not out. It was like Yahoo or some other search engine. And there was a
Ask
place
Jeeves.
In this is a long time ago. Yeah, this is a place in Elizabeth. I think you probably know Dan Rogliotti. He's
Big Dan. Yeah,
Big Dan. Yeah, he's been the ref for like the bigger fights at UFC. Dan was running a shoot fighting club out of Elizabeth. It's no longer there. And it was Muay Thai, some jiu-jitsu, and I was going there. And I competed in NAGA Worlds like 2 weeks into my training. Yeah. And it was very small. There was like eight guys in the whatever division I was in. I think I went to there's an intermediate I went into, and basically I saw a lot of guys at my level going into the beginner, and I only wrestled 4 years in high school, but I coached. I was kind of always coaching. I was always on the mat. I was immersed in it. So even though I only wrestled 4 years in high school, my knowledge of the sport, they said, you got to do intermediate. And I lost both of my fights, but I had a very close one. I lost in I guess like a criteria overtime to a judo black belt. And I just didn't know jiu-jitsu. And I started training harder and harder. And I tore my ACL leading up to, I think it was going to be Grappler's Quest. I was so pissed from losing because I lost very close grappling matches. I was like, nobody's going to beat me now. I'm just going to fucking train so hard.
Yes.
I'm going to out-train every motherfucker out there and I will never lose again. So leading up to Grappler's Quest, I tore my ACL, and it really just, man, it just set me off. And I said, I'm going to do the like most exhaustive research on how combat athletes train. And I started with how do the best wrestlers train, and at the time, really, Russia was just crushing it. So I started researching as much as I could the training methods of Russian wrestlers. And when I got that ACL surgery, you know, I always tell this story. I was literally, when they were rolling me into the operating room to have surgery, in my head, I was like, man, as soon as this fucking surgery's over, it's, you know, game over. I'm going to declare war on the world of combat strength and conditioning. And I just became an obsessed madman, and I still am, with the training of the combative athletes. And I started training them out of my parents' backyard, and we had a small one-car garage. The ceiling was like six and a half feet tall. I would train them at the local playgrounds, the backyard where we had stones. I had an axe. I had them like chopping the tree stumps back there, carrying stones. They were doing like clean and press, bent over rows, squats. I had them sprinting. I had them doing like broad jumps up our driveway. The staircase to the house had like 30-something stairs, so I used to make them do like plyometrics up the stairs, hand walking up the stairs. And I didn't really know what I was doing as far as like the perfect way to organize, but I got them away from basically traditional gym workouts. And in a super short time, I'm talking a few weeks, the wrestlers I was training started beating guys that had beaten them. And they were not just like barely beating them. They were like major decision, like 10 points or more beating guys that they used to lose to. And I had one basketball player, and he said like nobody could keep up with him. He started slam dunking the ball. So that was the beginning. And that was my I was a fifth year teacher. So it was like 2002, 2003 when I began training the athletes in the summer. And in the wintertime, it just got so cold that I couldn't train them. So I started writing, doing like, you know, these writing, and Blogspot or Blogger had just come out.
So long ago.
It's long, dude. So I started using that to write, and people started interviewing me from kind of like all around the world. The first interview went to a website called SFUK, Shoot Fighting UK.
Wow.
And they interviewed me, and then I can't even remember some of the websites, but before I even owned a gym, I was after I left my parents' house, my wife and I bought a house in Edison, and it was a two-car garage, and I converted it to a gym. It was sweet. I mean, I put dumbbells, kegs, sandbags, squat rack, you know, all kinds of medicine balls. The backyard had tree logs, a climbing rope, sledgehammers. I mean, I was training them like Shaolin warrior monks. And this magazine came out called now – actually, I don't even know if it's going on. There's been you know, the past year or two, they had some serious – I don't even know, like the owner, you know, committed suicide. At the time, it was called Bodyguard Magazine. Then it became Tap Out Magazine. And I wrote for them when they were Bodyguard. My first article came out with Randy Couture and Chuck Liddell on the cover. And I remember, you know, when they first came out of the magazine, it was all basically through, you know, these guys that were pretty big names and kind of paid their way to write. And I remember I called the owner of the magazine probably like a couple times a week and emailed and called. And every time I called him, he didn't even remember my name. I remember, like, he must have been so busy. I was like, this is Zach Evanesh, and I wanted to just reach out to you because I see the articles in there, and I wanted to tell you that I will write for free for your magazine. And I was crazy. I go, I will fucking blow away everybody's articles in that magazine. I go, give me this opportunity. I go, you're going to get the feedback from that magazine, and then you guys could decide if you really want it. And it took a long time for him to finally say, hey, Zach, how you doing? Like, he must have had so much shit on his mind with getting a magazine going and all the other, you know, bells and whistles. And then he finally said, my son is a former wrestler, wrestled in college. He goes, send him your products. I see you got products. His son reviewed my main product, which was called the Underground Strength System. And his son basically told his dad, like, holy shit, this guy's the real deal. Like, he ain't messing around. We need this guy to write for us. And I wrote for them for years, years. And and just, you know, the way magazines are, they got to pay their way through ads. So eventually I stopped writing for them. But I wrote for them for a long time. And, you know, the evolution, basically, it went from my parents' house to my first house and then to the gym that you trained at. We've been in that warehouse for a little over 7 years, and I have another location that I've been here for like a year and a half.
Yeah, guess what? I ride by your other location probably like 5 times a week.
I'm gonna stop. You're down that way?
Yeah, I live like the next town over.
Yeah, so that one, kind of like the Edison gym, you can't really see it because it's behind a house.
Yeah, it's completely blocked off.
Yeah, it's blocked off. And then the Manasquan gym is located behind a couple warehouse buildings. So nobody sees that either. So the people that come to us find out about us through word of mouth. And they see our stuff online. And, you know, to this day, I'm in there on a regular basis training. You know, we train a lot of wrestlers, a lot of football players. But we also have, you know, baseball, swimming, fencing, soccer, track and field, basketball, like sports that you just wouldn't imagine, you know, coming through. And we have jiu-jitsu guys at the gym down the shore. It's just great. And that's where I always feel at my home, is when I train people in the gym. I mean, I have a lot of stuff on the internet, but I got to tell you, I'm most at home when I could communicate and be in person with somebody, with people.
Now, Zach, where is your gym in Manasquan, since it's a little hidden if some people are listening or from the Monmouth County area?
It's 202 East Main Street, and it's right near the train station. So it's there's a CVS near the train station. If you go across the street from CVS, there's Sotheby's Real Estate, Kenny's Auto Garage, then there's a machine shop.
Yep.
And we are back. We're back there.
Cool. Yeah, I know exactly where it is. I'm going to have to stop by.
At me. Yeah.
Now, I know you were talking about how you got started with, you know, just from one step to the next step. Now, I remember years ago, I actually followed one of your websites that had a lot of articles. I think you even had, there was like a lot of things on your website, just like certain blogs, certain this, certain that. Are you still running that website? And what website was that again,
I've got the ZachEvanesh.com, which is undergroundstrength.tv. I update that all the time. And then I have undergroundstrengthcoach.com. That's my inner circle. That has been going on since 2005. That's a membership site. And, man, it's got videos, articles, interviews, tons of content that I just don't release to the non-paying. And there's some original old content in there. It's quite amazing. So mainly, you know, my blog, the Zach Evanesh blog, is undergroundstrength.tv. That has the articles. And then the inner circle is where I post a workout for everybody to follow every month, and they could archive it to 2005. It's nuts.
Oh, wow. Hey, Zach, I actually follow you on Instagram, and you always are posting some, like, cool workouts and some cool – you're always, like, playing with some different toys, like the tires and maces, and I was seeing one of you carrying a rock around, like, your backyard or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
How are you, like, evolving, like, strength and conditioning training? Do you like to stick to the basics, or are you always looking for, like, the latest and greatest toys, or do you think a lot of the toys are kind of, like, bullshit?
And that's an interesting question he asked, because I've even seen that you were on a bodyweight kick for a while as well, so I just was going to throw that as well in there.
Because everybody's always like, oh, Bulgarian bags, or, you know, battle ropes, or, you know.
It's that's the thing, is, like, a lot of people in the industry, you know, it's fads, it's gimmicks, it's shortcuts, it's how to avoid the hard work, it's use this, use that. I don't discriminate against anything that's going to make you strong. And I don't really use machines, but we'll use a lot of different free weights, from the barbells and the dumbbells to the kettlebells. We use the odd objects, the sandbags, the stones, the tractor tires, of course, a lot of sled work, sledgehammers. I mean, these are all things that get people strong, and I don't do it to be flashy, because if you just gave me, you know, let's say when I was training Jaffer, you know, we had all that stuff, but if all I had was a barbell and, you know, we were just like in a garage, I still would have turned Jaffer into a bad motherfucker, like just doing the basics. And that's the thing, is that I'm not into the fads, to the gimmicks. I'm into whatever is best for the people training with me, and that's what counts, is their results. Like, I don't really care if I don't want to sound rude, but I don't give a shit if it impresses people or if I get a million likes. To me, what's important is the success of the people I train, because, you know, you guys all, like, competitors have a small window of time. Certainly some competitors could go for a long period of time, but, you know, most of the athletes I train are high school and college. So that's 4 to 8 years for the rest of your life, you know, those memories. I don't want to ever look back and say, oh, shit, somebody sent me some fancy piece of equipment and I used it to satisfy whatever, their commercial. Like, I don't, that's why I don't give a shit. Like, I do, you know, I do what works best, and that's all there is to it. And I also found that, you know, the variety helps for combative athletes, because they're more, you guys are like eccentric. You know, they could get bored easily. That's why, you know, even though in combative sports, there's the basics. There's these basic moves you must learn, but there's so many variables and variations to it. So, you know, there's a lot of tweaks that you could put into play without, you know, looking fancy. And I tell you, like, just, you know, usually the more fancy something is, the less effective it is. Like, all this, you know, you end up just jumping around and kind of looking like you're just doing like a crazy dance, and that's not the stuff that works.
So now, right now, what does your own personal training look like? Because I know you said you train a lot of high school kids and this and that, and their injuries are definitely not like like most individuals in their late 30s, early 40s. So what is your training now basically composed of?
I still train pretty hard, and my training, I do a lot of body weight, like you said. Sometimes it's all body weight. Sometimes it's just kettlebell. Like, I have a kettlebell in my backyard. My body weight workout might be I'll go to the beach and I might run on the sand, burpees, bear crawls, crab walks. Then I might like run like in knee deep water and doing a lot of like kind of like running through resistance. Then I'll swim. I'll do body surfing. I'll be kind of like in and out of the water. I'll do that, of course, when it's warmer out. I live pretty close to the beach.
So you're doing a lot of, like, lower impact stuff because maybe you're older, like, mitigate some of your injuries, or you don't want to get injured.
It just feels to me pure. It feels like animalistic when you're in the water, you're swimming, you're crawling, you're jumping. Like, I feel athletic. I don't there's a level that you get to where if you get stronger, it doesn't necessarily make you better at life or better at that sport. You need to get more efficient, more explosive. Those things are critical. And then there's certainly days where I'm deadlifting, squatting, power cleaning, tire flipping. So, you know, yesterday, like I'll tell you my workout, I did 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 reps, back squat, kettlebell snatch, burpees, and then I did heavy squats for just sets of one. I warmed up before that workout with some light sleds, some calisthenics and ab work. A lot of times I'm doing like couplets and triplets. Even though I like to train heavy, I still like to train fast. So another workout might be something like, let's say I'm going to bench press. I might do 5 sets of anywhere from 3 to 6 reps, coupled with rope climbing, coupled with ab wheel rollouts. Then when I'm done with that, I might do some sort of squat variation using a kettlebell, or I might do a heavy sandbag, or at the new gym, I have heavy D-balls. They're 100 and 150 pounds. So maybe I'll say, okay, shoulder this ball, you know, 20 reps as fast as you can. Then when I'm done, I'll do some sort of a circuit like battling ropes, abs, even arm work. And so I like to mix for my own training because I'm not competing in combative sports. I still train in a combative way, but I blend in a little bit more some bodybuilding work. And bodybuilding work is still good to do, even for combative athletes, because it builds tissue strength. It could add muscle for some of the athletes who need to have the muscle on them, especially when I'm working with the younger kids. We get kids that are entering high school that might weigh like just shy of 90 pounds. The lightest wrestling weight class is 106, and then like 6 weeks into the season, it becomes 108. For them to wrestle at 106, they need to weigh 112 because they're going to lose weight from the practice. So sometimes I have to put what's that, one, like 90 to 1. So I have to put on like 24 pounds sometimes in 3 months on a kid. It's so I'll utilize whatever is needed for that person. So, you know, you'll look in our gym and there's kind of a general workout going on, but it's individualized for what everybody needs. So if I feel that somebody needs mental toughness, I do that. When Jaffer was training, I remember he was good at communicating. He's also older than, you know, he's not a high school kid. He really knows his body. I remember him saying, you know what, I'm feeling really good when I'm doing my pad work. Or he'd sometimes say, I'm feeling burnt out. So when he was feeling burnt out or when he was doing a lot of sparring, I didn't want to add more conditioning work because his sparring was the best conditioning work. So I slowed his workout down and turned it into a power and strength-based workout because what were we doing? We were working on what he needed, and that was really the ticket right there, is that we, you know, you got to be careful with, you know, here I'm sharing my workout, and for the people listening, I don't want them to say, sometimes like you are so influenced by somebody, you just copy their workout. Like, people are looking at The Rock on Instagram and he's posting all his workouts. And then a guy I know who's like 39, he's like, I was doing his workouts, it was great. And then I don't know what happened. I couldn't even fucking walk for 3 days.
Yeah, I'd rather take part in his cheat days.
Yeah.
So I told him, I said, dude, I just wanted to remind you that you're a husband, you're a father, you've got two kids, you're running a business. I go, The Rock doesn't even cook his food. That's all prepared for him. He gets to sleep when he needs to. Like, his lifestyle is based around just, you know, work and lift and the recovery, and he's probably got the best steroids. You know, he feeds himself properly. I said, dude, you can't copy. But, you know, that's what I did when I was a kid. I copied Arnold Schwarzenegger's workouts when I was younger.
Pumping iron?
Yeah.
Eating birthday cake, I mean, smoking a J?
There you go, exactly. You know, I got to say, it's funny because training at your place, I've never been more motivated for workouts. Like, a lot of people ask me, you know, when am I going to come back to the ring? And the truth is, I would probably only train for a fight at your place because it's not only the routines. Those damn kids, they're freaking the most motivating training partners you could ever have. I mean, those kids were pulling everything on those sleds. I mean,
yeah.
Jesus Christ, those kids were, I'm pretty sure, you know, they probably eat horse meat or something.
Yo, what's up?
It's funny to see how they progress because it gives you such, like, you see that you're around those young kids. And I say the same thing, like, sometimes, like, these kids, they're, like, 18 years old and they're stronger than me, and that motivates me. So you're like, oh shit, but that's the whole goal, like, of course, you know, I'm 38, but when I see their progress, it motivates me to want to keep, you know, keep going. And things, like you guys said, things change when you're in your late 30s. So you have to really pay much more attention to your recovery, your nutrition, your whole lifestyle, and the training changes as well. But when you're 15, 16, 18, 21, 23, your body is so primed to handle the work. And it's a great time to kind of like wire the body properly. Kind of the way that if you guys ever met a gymnast, let's say you meet a gymnast who's 40 years old. They haven't done gymnastics for 20 years.
And they're still shredded.
They're still ripped. They're still doing flips. They can walk on their hands. I mean, I've seen it with kids in high school, and they did gymnastics for 2 years when they were in like third and fourth grade. But they can walk on their hands. In the gym, like do a whole lap. They could do flips. They climb rope extremely proficiently. So there's that when you're at this like developmental age, you could kind of hardwire the nervous system in a way that it almost doesn't forget what it could do and what it's capable of performing.
That's like a lot of kids who start wrestling when they're 5 or 6 or 7 and then, you know, you train jiu-jitsu with them when they're 25 for their first time and they're like, Their weight distribution is perfect. Their shot 10 years later is still perfect. And most of those kids are like, they have just, they're just shredded. Like, they
built a base.
Yeah, they just had that 10 or 12 years of hard training. And maybe they didn't even play in college or train in college. And then they step back on the mat and it's like muscle memory, no problem.
Some, yeah. And some go the other way, though. I've seen some that were just, you know, put the fear of God in other kids and then they stop competing, and they just get tired of it, and they don't want that edge anymore. They don't want that warrior mentality anymore. Like I've seen a lot of guys that were state champ, all state, multiple state champs, and then you see them years later and they don't work out. They don't, they're not like trying to succeed at life. And, you know, to me, that's, you know, mysteries of the mind. I'll never understand how a warrior loses the mentality, but it's momentum. You know, if you stop,
people get burnt out too, you know?
Yeah. Or they just want this break. Like, I want to be a normal person. I want to just come home and sit on the couch. You lose momentum. Like Mike Tyson went to jail. He was never the same when he got out of there. You know, he just was not the same. Or when he wasn't training with Customato, he wasn't in the Catskills. You know, Mickey said it best in Rocky IV. He goes, "Did the worst thing a fighter could do is you got civilized." And it is, that is a big reason why I run the gym the way I do, because if I start air conditioning the gym or I start giving them only the perfect workout and the perfect environment, and that's why you see us wrestling on the front lawn, because they're so used to wrestling with a referee and on a wrestling mat in the circle that if I don't take them out of there, they won't learn how to embrace fear. And, you know, true story, and the reason why it reminds me is I went to the Quick Check in Fords, which is not far from Apollon and Edison. And when I was 16, I got jumped out front. I got jumped by like 8 to 10 guys.
Holy shit.
And it was really shocking because it started with just me and another guy. And I thought that everybody would watch us like fight. Like I thought it would be like they're going to watch us do a man-to-man thing. And I remember they were drunk. When, you know, long story short, when I walked into Quick Check, these two guys were just giving me like an evil eye, sitting on their car, and I stared back at them. I walk out 10 minutes later. There's like fucking 12 dudes out there. One guy's freaking out. He's like, "We're going to fight. We're going to fight." And then he's like, "Look at me now. Stare at me now." So he starts pushing. You know, I turn around. He pushes me again. I'd never thrown a punch in my life. You know, the best thing I could have done was learning, you know, Muay Thai. But this is 1992. He pushes me. I hit him with a double leg takedown because all I know how to do is wrestle. I'm out of my element. I've never done anything on the street. And I get him to the ground, and I remember holding him and not throwing a punch, just holding him down. He screams, "Get him off, get him off." My reaction in my mind, I remember, was, "Nobody's going to get me off of you, dude. We're just going to fight it out, me and you." In like a fraction of a second, there must have been 8 dudes just kicking me from my head down to my ribs.
Oh, geez.
And they were just like beating me up throughout the parking lot. And I remember we kind of were moving all over the place. And I remember, again, I hit another kid with a double leg takedown. I remember they had my shirt. They swung me. One guy pulled me, and another guy punched. So it was like the meeting of my body to his hand. I remember hitting that guy with a double leg. I didn't punch anybody. I didn't know how to do anything outside of a wrestling mat, which is such a shame. And to me, the most important thing with training these kids is not how do you succeed in your swimming, your wrestling, but be prepared for life. Be prepared for the fucking unpredictable. Be prepared, God forbid, for when 8 guys want to fight you on the street and you are not in shock. Be prepared for when Hurricane Sandy comes and maybe you need to protect your family because somebody rummaging through your garage fucking trying to rob your house. Like, you know, to me, training is so much more than sport. It is about fucking preparing for the battle of life. And I know sometimes that sounds intense, but my lifetime, I've learned that there is evil out there and that we need to fucking be ready for it. And I was talking to a buddy of mine who was making these blog posts about the zombies, when the zombies come to attack. And I was speaking to 2 of his guys that work for him. I said, "Dude, you know, when he was writing when the zombies attack, that doesn't mean the zombies like what you see in the movie. It means when Hurricane Sandy happens and fucking people are like, you know, going in your backyard trying to steal your generator, or somebody breaks into your house and you find them, you know, trying to steal shit." You know, when we were younger and the LA Lakers won the NBA championship, they fucking rioted. So that's when they won. What happens when they lose? Then what happens? When my friend lives in New Orleans, he was there when the hurricane went through. I mean, they were all in the stadium, and women were getting, you know, attacked and shit. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, I think that the training goes beyond it just goes beyond sport. And that's how I look at things, because I've had these kind of life experiences that I always want to pass on to others. So when, you know, I look at the training, my training is not, am I training for wrestling? Am I training for...
No, you're training for life. You're training just to be able to produce and function. And it's kind of funny that you say the zombie training, because that's what I used to call my training when I used to train by myself. I would run, lift kettlebells, and after that I would go to range and shoot guns. And I'm like, this is like perfect zombie training, you know, in like a weird way, because you're not at the gym doing bicep curls. You're like outside running, throwing shit, and then you're going to the range and you're shooting motherfuckers.
Dude, there's a mental edge that you develop from that. And for all the men and even the women listening, you know, the worst thing you could do is lose that edge. You need to really be careful losing that, and that happens when you lose momentum. I understand that sometimes we do get burnt out and emotionally or physically. Okay, take a break from whatever you're doing and do something else, but never stop. Be careful of the comfort in your life. And that's why I wake up early. That's why sometimes I will, you know, sometimes I do shit that has nothing to do with the right workout. For example, I'll deadlift twice in one day without eating to make sure I still got the fucking, you know, cajones to be tough. And to me, that's more important than my ripped abs.
Yeah, but ripped abs always look good on the beach.
Yeah.
Truth, I ain't gonna deny it.
So now I wanted to ask you, you got a new book coming out. Tell us more about that.
It's I got the first one here. I don't know if you guys do video here, but this is the first color edition. And it's my story of the fucking weakest kid in the neighborhood to how I overcame weakness, to how I overcame even like bouts of depression when I was a teenager, to the tough times in life, and to how being strong always was the thing that gave me the foundation or helped me change myself. So it's training methods, it's training stories, it's stories, you know, of triumph into tragedy, from obstacle to opportunity. It's the mistakes I've made in training. A lot of authors don't speak about that. I talk about the mistakes I made. There's case studies in here about some of like the most kick-ass athletes that have been shaped and built through the Underground Strength Gym. And it's a book about dominating in the gym and dominating in life. And I want this book to get into the hands of teenagers, as well as into the hands of guys your age in our 30s, and as well as into the people in their 60s, 70s.
Where can you get
strength?
Where can you get your book at? Is it a physical copy, or can you get a digital download?
It's gonna be. I think we're releasing it on September. September 8th is a Monday. We're gonna release it. Dragon Door is the publisher, and it's gonna be on Dragon Door. It's gonna be on Amazon, and you know, anywhere that they sell books. You just have to kind of go to the bookstore and ask them to, I guess, order it. And it's gonna be a. It's going to be a life-changing book. I'm super proud of it, and I really had to overcome a lot of obstacles just to get it done because of some of the things that happened during the writing, during the whole – a lot of emotions went into it because I had to relive a lot of my past. And also I was midway through it during Hurricane Sandy, and that was a super emotional experience living here by the beach. And,
yeah, same here, man.
A lot of things have happened since the starting of the book. So this is the tagline is how to get stronger and tougher in the gym and in life using the training secrets of the athletic elite. And we've had kids, you know, young athletes train here who become All-American, national champ. We have a good amount of kids going to college to compete, and a lot of them are going to the Division I level. And we've had a couple different athletes also competing at the Olympic level, doing international competition, Pan Am Games, and Olympic trials, from fencing to wrestling, swimming, and it's been, you know, the training. This book, I just can't wait for it to get into people's hands. I just can't wait. I think, you know, I don't think I know. It's going to inspire so many people, and to me, that's very important because people, they're not inspired anymore. And, you know, to me, that hurts. I feel, you know, a buddy of mine said a long time ago, he goes, dude, I think you were put on this earth. He goes, I think God put you on this earth to make people strong. And when he said that to me, it changed the whole direction of how I view what I do. I don't take what I do lightly at all.
Now, before we wrap up, I want to ask you, any sponsors, any kind of people you work with, websites, anything you want to plug at all right now?
Man, I guess just go to undergroundstrength.tv, click on the Start Here tab, get my newsletter. I have some free training courses that you get, and I do that because I want to prove to people and encourage them that it's about the hard work. I give them training to follow, videos to follow, stuff to get them back on track or to improve where they're at. So go to the blog, and of course I want to thank Dragon Door because, you know, they really were super flexible with my deadline, and writing this book went way beyond the deadline, and there's too many people to thank. I would forget them all, you know. There's so many people, and just, you know, stuff like this, you guys interviewing me, which gives me an opportunity to share with people. I just want to help people get strong, you know, like it is, not in the gym, not just in the gym, but in life. I don't have any sponsors. So
Bank of America.
Work with a lot of great people, and you know, my family inspires me. So I can't, saying thank you just doesn't do justice, man. It just, there's a lot of people I need to thank.
Zach, if people want to find you on social media, do you have like a Pinterest, a MySpace, Facebook?
MySpace.
I know.
I think we did this interview in 2005 or some shit.
Never know.
I'm on my Facebook fan page is just Zach's fan page, Z-A-C-H-S, Zach'sFanPage.com. Twitter is Z Evanesh. Instagram is Z Evanesh. So that's where, and then of course my YouTube channel has something, I must have like 1700 videos on YouTube. And for the people that are very serious and really want, you know, the access to me and whatnot, you've got my certification, that's undergroundstrength.org, and then the Inner Circle, which is, I'll tell you, your listeners, if they go to undergroundtrained.com, that's a VIP invite with a nice discount for a super cheap monthly membership.
Nice. So now before we finish up, we have one segment we do on our podcast, just kind of end it out. So basically, we both pick one random question at will, and we have the person just answer it 100% completely truthful, no lies, no nothing. Sounds like a plan?
Yeah.
All right, John, you got one, buddy?
Did you ever wrestle naked with other dudes?
What?
Hells no.
Oh, man.
Oh, my God.
Okay. Wow, that kind of threw me off track. Okay.
I just want to be as ridiculous as possible.
Okay, so.
That's funny.
So, I always like to stir the pot. You're my boy, and I work at another gym that has the same name. Did you come up with the name Underground for a gym first, as opposed to the Russians? And who were you calling out? It's a two-part. Who were you calling out on Facebook about stealing the Underground name?
Yeah, so the name is called Underground Strength Gym. And you find people kind of like finding their way around it. They'll call their gym like Gym Underground or Underground Strength and Conditioning or Underground Strength and Fitness. And it's kind of like people that you know that they're on, and they're all over the country. And actually, one was in Russia, believe it or not. I think I did an image search for Underground Strength Gym, and one gym was in Russia. And to me, when you're a coach, you just shouldn't be, you shouldn't steal the name of like somebody's gym. You know, back when we were training guys out of the house, which started in like let's see, that was my fourth year teaching, so it may have been like 02, 03 when I, you know, we were already calling that the Underground Strength Gym. Underground Strength Coach came out and like with Ryan Lee, that was before I owned a gym, so that was like 04, the fall of 04. So when people do that as coaches, I think it just sets the wrong tone, and it bothers me because I look at like what I've gone through to make this happen. Like Underground Strength Gym is not like I looked around and said, that's a cool name. It, you know, has came about through my struggles of building a gym, training from my parents' house, going to Newark to buy equipment. And when I went to Newark on more than one occasion to buy equipment, like I had money like in my pocket, in my underwear, in my sock. Like I was fucking ready to I was like, dude, I'm going into no man's land here. I don't know if somebody's going to jump me. I don't know if this was a setup. When I was buying equipment, that shit was off of the newspaper classifieds. It wasn't from like the things I had to go through. So
you weren't on Craigslist. Bothers
me when somebody says, "Hey, Underground Strength Gym or Underground Strength and Fitness." Like, you know, people should come up with, I think, like something more original. And even somebody was in like an island. I can't remember what island it was, but they posted on Facebook. They're like, "Zach, I had no clue you had like an affiliate here." And they took the whole logo and put a banner outside their gym called the Underground Strength Gym. And even though Underground Strength Gym is trademarked, so is Underground Strength Coach. It's not. I don't even have the desire to want to do this stupid. Like sending them trademark shit or asking my lawyer to do it. I feel like I shouldn't even have to fucking tell a coach you don't steal. It's just ethical, you know. A coach, coach is supposed to be a very high level figure that focuses on ethics. You know, like doing the right thing. Like if I'm training a wrestler, I would never say to him, dude, drink this secret drink. It's not allowed, but do it. It will give you the edge. I would never be able to fall asleep at night. Everything should be done through your own. And it's just not good. I don't like it. It's just unethical, and I hate that shit.
No, I agree with you. That's why I have to put it out there, because I know one thing. It's one thing to read it on Facebook, but it's another thing to hear the inflection in somebody's voice. Because when I read that too, I was, you know, even I was like, damn, why are people stealing his name? That's like if somebody tomorrow was saying, oh, we're Bad Guy Muay Thai, I'd lose my shit over that too.
It just makes, I don't get people who do that stuff. And because I, you know, when I started the warehouse gym, the only guys I knew really running warehouse gyms was Joe DeFranco, Jason Ferrugia. I don't really know if I knew of other guys doing it at the time. And then strength coaches just started copying my entire website, and then they insert their gym name. They just copied it, cut and pasted it, and some of them have even gone through my certification. And to me, that hurts when, like, people know that they shouldn't do that stuff. And listen, I'm just I'm always going to be that emotional guy. I'm a very emotional-driven person. So I'm like, damn, dude, that person went through the certification and they just cut and pasted my shit, or they really studied it and pulled a majority of it. To me, like, I just wouldn't feel good in any manner. I don't know. It just wouldn't feel good. And I understand we all sometimes make mistakes, like in our early days. You do look at what other people are doing. And that's why I actually don't look at what other people are doing, because I don't want to be influenced by their words, by the way they do stuff at all. But when I know people, you know, people know better. You shouldn't copy. It's just not the right thing to do, period. Whether you're a coach or anything. And I even once caught a college wrestler. He had finished college wrestling, and he was kind of getting into being a fitness coach. And he had a blog, and I don't know how I came about it, but he started copying all my articles, putting it on his blog, and just putting his name.
Oh,
and I remember I emailed him
because
he was on my new. I saw he was on my. I said, "Dude, you're a college wrestler." I go, "You know better." I go, "Wrestlers are known. We're known for understanding that we have to do things alone." And he's like, "I got caught up. I started getting busy." And it just still, like, that's what it takes to grow a business. It's hard work, guys. You know, you anything that you steal and take and all that shit, it just doesn't do anything for you. It's a bad karma on your own shoulders. So, you know, what I try to do now, it does bother me. But what I try to do now is a friend of mine told me this. He goes, listen, he goes, you have to get rid of the poison in your body. He goes, they might win in the short term by copying. He goes, but when they're 60 and 70 years old and their grandparents, he goes, they're going to lose the respect of their grandkids. Because when the truth, he goes, the truth is going to, you know, they're going to have to tell their grandkids that I built my business by stealing from somebody. He goes, they're going to, that's when they lose the respect. He goes, that's what's most important. He goes, but you can't live with poison in your body. And that's something like I'm working on all the time because I always want people to be, you know, I've learned in business that people are just going to, some people are just going to be very, they won't give a shit. Oh, I'm your friend? Hey, man, I'll fucking chase that dollar. I don't care. I'll go for the dollar over the friendship. And I've seen that. And then you hear of, like, the war of art, people being nice, or the 50 laws of power or whatever that shit is. Like, they're nice to get what they want. And I've learned a lot the past few years, a lot. And that's why I tried to get the kids to be tough through training to carry over to life, because this is going to happen to everybody. You know, you might have a typical job, such as you might be a police officer, and you get to a higher ranking, or you try to get to a higher ranking, and maybe the better person doesn't get the job. Maybe the politically connected person gets the job. You got to be careful with letting those things, like, control you and fuck you up. You have to always climb forward in wherever, whatever arena you're in. So, you know, I have gotten way better through the years, I'll tell you that. I used to let this shit just fuck with me bad.
I hear you, Zach. And I just want to thank you so much for giving us your time. I mean, personally, as somebody who's worked with you for a fight camp, I think you are way beyond so many coaches. And I mean, I could probably get in trouble for this, but I definitely think you are the coach, because we all know I work for competitors. I've worked for other competitors, and I'll say this up front, everybody can download it. Zach Evanesh is the coach to go to. So follow him.